Finished, Brom threw it back onto the rack, and Joad jammed his parchment, ink, and pen into his pouch. Aragorn grabbed the torch. They raced from the room and shut the door, but just as it closed, they heard the heavy tramp of soldiers' boots at the end of the hall. They turned to leave, but Brom hissed furiously, "Damnation, it's not locked!" He put his hand against the door. The lock clicked at the same time three armed soldiers came into view.
"Hey, get away from that door!" shouted one of them.
Brom stepped back, assuming a surprised expression. The three men marched up to them. The tallest one demanded,
"Why are you trying to get into the records?"
Aragorn gripped his bow tighter and prepared to run.
"I'm afraid we lost our way."
The strain was evident in Joad's voice. A drop of sweat rolled down his neck. The soldier glared at them suspiciously.
"Check inside the room," he ordered one of his men.
Aragorn held his breath as the soldier stepped up to the door, tried to open it, then pounded on it with his mailed fist.
"It's locked, sir."
The leader scratched his chin.
"All right, then. I don't know what you were up to, but as long as the door's locked, I guess you're free to go. Come on."
The soldiers surrounded them and marched them back to the keep.
"I can't believe it," thought Aragorn. "They're helping us get away."
At the main gates, the soldier pointed and said,
"Now you walk through those and don't try anything. We'll be watching. If you have to come back, wait until morning."
"Of course," promised Joad.
Aragorn could feel the guards' eyes boring into their backs as they hurried out of the castle. The moment that the gates closed behind them, a triumphant grin stretched across his face, and he jumped into the air. Brom shot him a cautioning look and growled,
"Walk back to the house normally. You can celebrate there."
Chastised, Aragorn adopted a staid demeanor, but inside he still bubbled with energy. Once they had hurried back to the house and into the study, Aragorn exclaimed,
"We did it!"
"Yes, but now we have to figure out if it was worth the trouble," said Brom.
Joad took a map of Alagazia from the shelves and unrolled it on the desk. On the left side of the map, the ocean extended to the unknown west. Along the coast stretched the Spine, an immense length of mountains. The Hadarach Desert filled the center of the map. The east end was blank. Somewhere in that void hid the Varden. To the south was Cirda, a small country that had seceded from the Empire after the Riders' fall. Aragorn had been told that Cirda secretly supported the Varden. Near Cirda's eastern border was a mountain range, labeled Beor Mountains. Aragorn had heard of them in many stories. They were supposed to be 10 times the height of the Spine, though he privately believed that was an exaggeration. The map was empty to the east of the Beors. 5 islands rested off the coast of Cirda: Nie, Palum, Uden, Ilium, and Beerland. Nie was no more than an outcropping of rock, but Beerland, the largest, had a small town. Farther up, near Tirm, was a jagged island called Sharktooth, and high to the north was one more island, immense, and shaped like a knobby hand. Aragorn knew its name without even looking. Vroengard, the ancestral home of the Riders, once a place of glory, but now a looted, empty shell, haunted by strange beasts. In the center of Vroengard was the abandoned city of Doru Arriba. Carvajal was a small dot at the top of Palancar Valley. Level with it, but across the plains, sprawled the forest, Duweldenvarden. Like the Beor Mountains, its eastern end was unmapped. Parts of Duweldenvarden's western edge had been settled, but its heart lay mysterious and unexplored. The forest was wilder than the Spine. The few who braved its depths often came back raving mad, or not at all. Aragorn shivered as he saw Urubane in the center of the Empire. King Albatorix ruled from there with his black dragon Shrukan by his side. Aragorn put his finger on Urubane. The Razak are sure to have a hiding place here.
"You would better hope that that isn't their only sanctuary," said Brom flatly. "Otherwise you'll never get near them."
He pushed the rustling map flat with his wrinkled hands. Joad took the parchment out of his pouch and said,
"From what I saw in the records, there have been shipments of Seether oil to every major city in the Empire over the past 5 years. As far as I can tell, all of them might have been ordered by wealthy jewelers. I'm not sure how we can narrow down the list without more information."
Brom swept a hand over the map.
"I think we can eliminate some cities. The Razak have to travel wherever the king wants, and I'm sure he keeps them busy. If they're expected to go anywhere at any time, the only reasonable place for them to stay is at a crossroads where they can reach every part of the country fairly easily. He was excited now and paced the room. This crossroads has to be large enough so the Razak will be inconspicuous. It also has to have enough trade so any unusual requests, special food for their mounts, for example, will go unnoticed.
That makes sense, said Joad, nodding. Under those conditions, we can ignore most of the cities in the north. The only big ones are Tirm, Gilead, and Siunon. I know they're not in Tirm, and I doubt that the oil has been shipped farther up the coast to Narda. It's too small. Siunon is too isolated. Only Gilead remains.
The Razak might be there, conceded Brom. It would have a certain irony.
It would at that, Joad acknowledged softly. What about southern cities? Asked Aragorn. Well, said Joad, there's obviously Urubane, but that's an unlikely destination. If someone were to die from Seetharoil in Galbatorix's court, it would be all too easy for an earl or some other lord to discover that the Empire had been buying large amounts of it. That still leaves many others, any of which could be the one we want.
Yes, said Aragorn, but the oil wasn't sent to all of them. The parchment only lists Coasta, Drasleona, Arros, and Bellatona.
Coasta wouldn't work for the Razak. It's on the coast and surrounded by mountains. Arros is isolated like Siunon, though it is a centre of trade. That leaves Bellatona and Drasleona, which are rather close together. Of the two, I think Drasleona is the likelier. It's larger and better situated.
And that's where nearly all the goods of the Empire pass through at one time or another, including Tirm's, said Joad. It would be a good place for the Razak to hide.
So, Drasleona, said Brom, as he sat down and lit his pipe. What do the records show?
Joad looked at the parchment.
Here it is. At the beginning of the year, 3 shipments of Seether oil were sent to Drasleona. Each shipment was only 2 weeks apart, and the records say they were all transported by the same merchant. The same thing happened last year and the year before that. I doubt any one jeweller, or even a group of them, has the money for so much oil.
What about Gilead? Asked Brom, raising an eyebrow.
It doesn't have the same access to the rest of the Empire, and, Joad tapped the parchment, they've only received the oil twice in recent years. He thought for a moment, then said,
Besides, I think we forgot something. Hellgrind.
Brom nodded.
Ah, yes, the Dark Gates. It has been many years since I've thought of it.
You're right. That would make Drasleona perfect for the Razak. I guess it's decided, then. That's where we'll go.
Aragorn sat abruptly, too drained of emotion to even ask what Hellgrind was.
I thought I would be happy to resume the hunt. Instead, I feel like an abyss has opened before me. Drasleona, it's so far away.
The parchment crackled as Joad slowly rolled up the map. He handed it to Brom and said,
You'll need this, I'm afraid. Your expeditions often take you into obscure regions.
Nodding, Brom accepted the map. Joad clapped him on the shoulder.
It doesn't feel right that you will be leaving without me. My heart expects to go along, but the rest of me reminds me of my age and responsibilities.
I know, said Brom, but you have a life in Tirm. It is time for the next generation to take up the standard. You've done your part. Be happy.
What of you? Asked Joad. Does the road ever end for you?
A hollow laugh escaped Brom's lips.
I see it coming, but not for a while.
He extinguished his pipe, and they left for their rooms exhausted. Before he fell asleep, Aragorn contacted Saphira to relate the night's adventures.
A costly mistake.
In the morning, Aragorn and Brom retrieved their saddlebags from the stable and prepared to depart. Joad greeted Brom while Helen watched from the doorway. With grave looks, the two men clasped hands.
I'll miss you, old man, said Joad.
And I you, said Brom thickly.
He bowed his white head and then turned to Helen.
Thank you for your hospitality. It was most gracious.
Her face reddened. Aragorn thought she was going to slap him. Brom continued, unperturbed.
You have a good husband. Take care of him. There are few men as brave and as determined as he is. But even he cannot weather difficult times without support from those he loves. He bowed again and said gently, Only a suggestion, dear lady.
Aragon watched as indignation and hurt crossed Helen's face. Her eyes flashed as she shut the door brusquely. Sighing, Jode ran his fingers through his hair. Aragon thanked him for all his help, then mounted Cadoc. With the last farewell said, he and Brom departed. At Tirm's south gate, the guards let them through without a second glance. As they rode under the giant outer wall, Aragon saw movement in a shadow. Solimbum was crouched on the ground, tail twitching. The weircat followed them with inscrutable eyes. As the city receded into the distance, Aragon asked, What are weircats? Brom looked surprised at the question.
Why the sudden curiosity?
I heard someone mention them in Tirm. They're not real, are they? Said Aragon, pretending ignorance.
They are quite real.
During the Riders' years of glory, they were as renowned as the dragons. Kings and elves kept them as companions, yet the weircats were free to do what they chose. Very little has ever been known about them. I'm afraid that their race has become rather scarce recently.
Could they use magic? Asked Aragon.
No one sure, but they could certainly do unusual things. They always seemed to know what was going on, and somehow or another managed to get themselves involved.
Brom pulled his hood up to block a chill wind.
What's Hellgrind?
Asked Aragon after a moment's thought.
You'll see when we get to Dras Leona.
When Tirim was out of sight, Aragon reached out with his mind and called,
Saphira!
The force of his mental shout was so strong that Cadoc flicked his ears in annoyance. Saphira answered and sped toward them with all of her strength. Aragon and Brom watched as a dark blur rushed from a cloud, then heard a dull roar as Saphira's wings flared open. The sun shone behind the thin membranes, turning them translucent, silhouetting the dark veins. She landed with a blast of air. Aragon tossed Cadoc's reins to Brom.
I'll join you for lunch.
Brom nodded, but seemed preoccupied.
Have a good time, he said,
then looked at Saphira and smiled.
It's good to see you again.
And you too.
Aragon hopped onto Saphira's shoulders and held on tightly as she bounded upward. With the wind at her tail, Saphira sliced through the air.
Hold on,
she warned Aragon, and letting out a wild bugle, she soared in a great loop. Aragon yelled with excitement as he flung his arms in the air, holding on only with his legs.
I didn't know I could stay on while you did that without being strapped into the saddle, he said, grinning fiercely.
Neither did I,
admitted Saphira, laughing in her peculiar way. Aragon hugged her tightly, and they flew a level path, masters of the sky. By noon his legs were sore from riding bareback, and his hands and face were numb from the cold air. Saphira's scales were always warm to the touch, but she could not keep him from getting chilled. When they landed for lunch, he buried his hands in his clothes and found a warm, sunny place to sit. As he and Brom ate, Aragon asked Saphira,
Do you mind if I ride Cadoc?
He had decided to question Brom further about his past.
No, but tell me what he says.
Aragon was not surprised that Saphira knew his plans. It was nearly impossible to hide anything from her when they were mentally linked. When they finished eating, she flew away as he joined Brom on the trail. After a time, Aragon slowed Cadoc and said,
I need to talk to you. I wanted to do it when we first arrived in Tirm, but I decided to wait until now.
About what? Asked Brom.
Aragon paused.
There's a lot going on that I don't understand. For instance, who are your friends, and why were you hiding in Carvajal? I trust you with my life, which is why I'm still traveling with you, but I need to know more about who you are and what you are doing. What did you steal in Gilead, and what is the Tuatha Dû Oruthrim that you are taking me through? I think that after all that's happened, I deserve an explanation.
You eavesdropped on us.
Only once, said Aragon.
I see that you have yet to learn proper manners, said Brom grimly, tugging on his beard. What makes you think that this concerns you?
Nothing, really, said Aragon, shrugging. Just,
It's an odd coincidence that you happened to be hiding in Carvajal when I found Saphira's egg, and that you also know so much dragon lore. The more I think about it, the less likely it seems. There were other clues that I mostly ignored, but they're obvious now that I look back. Like how you knew of the Razak in the first place and why they ran away when you approached. And I can't help but wonder if you had something to do with the appearance of Saphira's egg. There's a lot you haven't told us, and Saphira and I can't afford to ignore anything that might be dangerous.
Dark lines appeared on Brom's forehead as he reined Snowfire to a halt. You won't wait? He asked.
Aragorn shook his head mulishly.
Brom sighed. This wouldn't be a problem if you weren't so suspicious. But I suppose that you wouldn't be worth my time if you were otherwise.
Aragorn was unsure if he should take that as a compliment. Brom lit his pipe and slowly blew a plume of smoke into the air.
I'll tell you, he said, but you have to understand that I cannot reveal everything.
Aragorn started to protest, but Brom cut him off.
It's not out of a desire to withhold information, but because I won't give away secrets that aren't mine. There are other stories woven in with this narrative. You'll have to talk with the others involved to find out the rest.
Very well. Explain what you can, said Aragorn.
Are you sure? Asked Brom. There are reasons for my secretiveness. I've tried to protect you by shielding you from forces that would tear you apart. Once you know of them and their purposes, you'll never have the chance to live quietly. You will have to choose sides and make a stand. Do you really want to know?
I cannot live my life in ignorance, said Aragorn quietly.
A worthy goal. Very well. There is a war raging in Alagazia between the Varden and the Empire. Their conflict, however, reaches far beyond any incidental armed clashes. They are locked in a titanic power struggle, centered around you.
Me? Said Aragorn, disbelieving. That's impossible! I don't have anything to do with either of them.
Not yet, said Brom. But your very existence is the focus of their battles. The Varden and the Empire aren't fighting to control this land or its people. Their goal is to control the next generation of riders, of whom you are the first. Whoever controls these riders will become the undisputed master of Alagazia.
Aragorn tried to absorb Brom's statements. It seemed incomprehensible that so many people would be interested in him and Saphira. No one besides Brom had thought he was that important. The whole concept of the Empire and Varden fighting over him was too abstract for him to grasp fully. Objections quickly formed in his mind. But all the riders were killed, except for the Forsworn who joined Galbatorix. As far as I know, even those are now dead. And you told me in Carvajal that no one knows if there are still dragons in Alagazia.
I lied about the dragons, said Brom flatly. Even though the riders are gone, there are still 3 dragon eggs left, all of them in Galbatorix's possession. Actually, there are only 2 now, since Saphira hatched. The king salvaged the 3 during his last great battle with the riders.
So there may soon be 2 new riders, both of them loyal to the king? Asked Aragorn, with a sinking feeling.
Exactly, said Brom. There is a deadly race in progress. Galbatorix is desperately trying to find the people for whom his eggs will hatch, while the Varden are employing every means to kill his candidates or steal the eggs.
But where did Saphira's egg come from? How could anyone have gotten it away from the king? And why do you know all of this? Asked Aragorn, bewildered.
So many questions, laughed Brom bitterly. There is another chapter to all this, one that took place long before you were born. Back then I was a bit younger, though perhaps not as wise. I hated the Empire for reasons I'll keep to myself and wanted to damage it in any way I could. My fervor led me to a scholar, Jode, who claimed to have discovered a book that showed a secret passageway into Galbatorix's castle. I eagerly brought Jode to the Varden, who are my friends, and they arranged to have the egg stolen.
The Varden!
However, something went amiss, and our thief got only 1 egg. For some reason he fled with it and didn't return to the Varden.
When he wasn't found, Jod and I were sent to bring him and the egg back.
Brom's eyes grew distant, and he spoke in a curious voice. That was the start of one of the greatest searches in history. We raced against the Razak and Morzan, last of the Forsworn, and the king's finest servant.
Morzan, interrupted Aragorn. But he was the one who betrayed the riders to Galbatorix, and that happened so long ago. Morzan must have been ancient.
It disturbed him to be reminded of how long riders lived.
So? Asked Brom, raising an eyebrow. Yes, he was old, but strong and cruel. He was one of the king's first followers, and by far his most loyal. As there had been blood between us before, the hunt for the egg turned into a personal battle. When it was located in Gilead, I rushed there and fought Morzan for possession. It was a terrible contest, but in the end I slew him. During the conflict I was separated from Jod. There was no time to search for him, so I took the egg and bore it to the Varden, who asked me to train whomever became the new rider. I agreed, and decided to hide in Carverhal, which I had been to several times before, until the Varden contacted me. I was never summoned.
Then how did Saphira's egg appear in the spine? Was another one stolen from the king?
Asked Aragorn.
Brom grunted. Small chance of that. He has the remaining two guarded so thoroughly that it would be suicide to try and steal them. No, Saphira was taken from the Varden, and I think I know how. To protect the egg, its guardian must have tried to send it to me with magic. The Varden haven't contacted me to explain how they lost the egg, so I suspect that their runners were intercepted by the Empire, and the Razak were sent in their place. I'm sure they were quite eager to find me, as I've managed to foil many of their plans.
Then the Razak didn't know about me when they arrived in Carverhal, said Aragorn, with wonder.
That's right, replied Brom. If that ass Sloane had kept his mouth shut, they might not have found out about you. Events could have turned out quite differently. In a way, I have you to thank for my life. If the Razak hadn't become so preoccupied with you, they might have caught me unawares, and that would have been the end of Brom the storyteller. The only reason they ran was because I'm stronger than the two of them, especially during the day. They must have planned to drug me during the night, then question me about the egg.
You sent a message to the Varden telling them about me?
Yes. I'm sure they'll want me to bring you to them as soon as possible.
But you're not going to, are you?
Brom shook his head.
No, I'm not.
Why not?
Being with the Varden must be safer than chasing after the Razak, especially for a new rider.
Brom snorted and looked at Aragorn with fondness. The Varden are dangerous people. If we go to them, you will be entangled in their politics and machinations. Their leaders may send you on missions just to make a point, even though you might not be strong enough for them. I want you to be well prepared before you go anywhere near the Varden. At least, while we pursue the Razak, I don't have to worry about someone poisoning your water. This is the lesser of two evils, and, he said with a smile, it keeps you happy while I train you. To Arthur Dhu Orothrim is just a stage in your instruction. I will help you find, and perhaps even kill, the Razak, for they are as much my enemies as yours. But then you will have to make a choice.
And that would be? Asked Aragorn wearily.
Whether to join the Varden, said Brom. If you kill the Razak, the only ways for you to escape Galbatorix's wrath will be to seek the Varden's protection, flee to Surda, or plead for the king's mercy and join his forces. Even if you don't kill the Razak, you will still face this choice eventually. Aragorn knew the best way to gain sanctuary might be to join the Varden, but he did not want to spend his entire life fighting the Empire like they did. He mulled over Brom's comments, trying to consider them from every angle.
You still didn't explain how you know so much about dragons.
No, I didn't, did I? Said Brom with a crooked smile. That will have to wait for another time.
Why me?
Aragorn asked himself.
What made him so special that he should become a rider? Did you ever meet my mother? He blurted.
Brom looked grave.
Yes, I did.
What was she like?
The old man sighed. She was full of dignity and pride, like Garrow.
Ultimately, it was her downfall, but it was one of her greatest gifts, nevertheless. She always helped the poor and the less fortunate, no matter what her situation.
You knew her well? Asked Aragorn, startled.
Well enough to miss her when she was gone. As Cadoc plodded along, Aragorn tried to recall when he had thought that Brom was just a scruffy old man who told stories. For the first time, Aragorn understood how ignorant he had been. He told Saphira what he had learned. She was intrigued by Brom's revelations, but recoiled from the thought of being one of Galbatorix's possessions. At last, she said,
"Aren't you glad that you didn't stay in Carvajal? Think of all the interesting experiences you would have missed."
Aragorn groaned in mock distress. When they stopped for the day, Aragorn searched for water, while Brom made dinner. He rubbed his hands together for warmth as he walked in a large circle, listening for a creek or spring. It was gloomy and damp between the trees. He found a stream a ways from the camp, then crouched on the bank, and watched the water splash over the rocks, dipping in his fingertips. The icy mountain water swirled around his skin, numbing it.
"It doesn't care what happens to us or anyone else," thought Aragorn.
He shivered and stood. An unusual print on the opposite stream bank caught his attention. It was oddly shaped and very large. Curious, he jumped across the stream and onto a rock shelf. As he landed, his foot hit a patch of damp moss. He grabbed a branch for support, but it broke and he thrust out his hand to break his fall. He felt his right wrist crack as he hit the ground. Pain lanced up his arm. A steady stream of curses came out from behind his clenched teeth as he tried not to howl. Half blind with pain, he curled on the ground, cradling his arm.
"Aragorn," came Saphira's alarmed cry. "What happened?"
"Broke my wrist. Did something stupid. Fell."
"I'm coming," said Saphira.
"No, I can make it back. Don't come. Trees too close for wings."
She sent him a brief image of her tearing the forest apart to get at him, then said,
"Hurry."
Groaning, he staggered upright. The print was pressed deeply into the ground a few feet away. It was the mark of a heavy, nail-studded boot. Aragorn instantly remembered the tracks that had surrounded the pile of bodies in Yazwak.
"Urgal," he spat,
wishing that Zarok was with him. He could not use his bow with only one hand. His head snapped up and he shouted with his mind,
"Saphira! Urgals! Keep Brom safe!"
Aragorn leapt back over the stream and raced toward their camp, yanking out his hunting knife. He saw potential enemies behind every tree and bush.
"I hope there's only one Urgal."
He burst into the camp, ducking as Saphira's tail swung overhead.
"Stop, it's me!" he yelled.
"Oops,"
said Saphira. Her wings were folded in front of her chest like a wall.
"Oops,"
growled Aragorn, running to her.
"You could have killed me. Where's Brom?"
"I'm right here," snapped Brom's voice from behind Saphira's wings. "Tell your crazy dragon to release me. She won't listen to me."
"Let him go,"
said Aragorn, exasperated. "Didn't you tell him?"
"No,"
she said sheepishly.
"You just said to keep him safe."
She lifted her wings, and Brom stepped forward angrily.
"I found an Urgal footprint, and it's fresh."
Brom immediately turned serious. "Saddle the horses, we're leaving." He put out the fire, but Aragorn did not move. "What's wrong with your arm?"
"My wrist is broken," he said, swaying.
Brom cursed and saddled Cadoc for him. He helped Aragorn onto the horse and said, "We have to put a splint on your arm as soon as possible. Try not to move your wrist until then." Aragorn gripped the reins tightly with his left hand. Brom said to Saphira, "It's almost dark. You might as well fly right overhead. If Urgals show up, they'll think twice about attacking with you nearby."
"They'd better, or else they won't think again,"
remarked Saphira as she took off. The light was disappearing quickly, and the horses were tired, but they spurred them on without respite. Aragorn's wrist, swollen and red, continued to throb. A mile from the camp, Brom halted. "Listen," he said. Aragorn heard the faint call of a hunting horn behind them. As it fell silent, panic gripped him. "They must have found where we were," said Brom, "and probably Saphira's tracks. They will chase us now. It's not in their nature to let prey escape." Then two horns winded. They were closer. A chill ran through Aragorn. Our only chance is to run, said Brom. He raised his head to the sky and his face blanked as he called Saphira. She rushed out of the night sky and landed. Leave Cadoc. Go with her, you'll be safer, commanded Brom.
What about you? Aragorn protested.
I'll be fine, now go. Unable to muster the energy to argue, Aragorn climbed onto Saphira while Brom lashed Snowfire and rode away with Cadoc. Saphira flew after him, flapping above the galloping horses. Aragorn clung to Saphira as best he could. He winced whenever her movements jostled his wrist. The horns blared nearby, bringing a fresh wave of terror. Brom crashed through the underbrush, forcing the horses to their limits. The horns trumpeted in unison close behind him, then were quiet. Minutes passed.
Where are the Urgals? Wondered Aragorn.
A horn sounded, this time in the distance. He sighed in relief, resting against Saphira's neck, while on the ground Brom slowed his headlong rush.
That was close, said Aragorn.
Yes, but we cannot stop until...
Saphira was interrupted as a horn blasted directly underneath them. Aragorn jerked in surprise, and Brom resumed his frenzied retreat. Horned Urgals, shouting with coarse voices, barreled along the trail on horses, swiftly gaining ground. They were almost in sight of Brom. The old man could not outrun them.
We have to do something! Exclaimed Aragorn.
What?
Land in front of the Urgals.
Are you crazy?
Demanded Saphira.
Land! I know what I'm doing, said Aragorn. There isn't time for anything else. They're going to overtake Brom.
Very well.
Saphira pulled ahead of the Urgals, then turned, preparing to drop onto the trail. Aragorn reached for his power and felt the familiar resistance in his mind that separated him from the magic. He did not try to breach it yet. A muscle twitched in his neck. As the Urgals pounded up the trail, he shouted, Now! Saphira abruptly folded her wings and dropped straight down from above the trees, landing on the trail in a spray of dirt and rocks. The Urgals shouted with alarm and yanked on their horses' reins. The animals went stiff-legged and collided into each other, but the Urgals quickly untangled themselves to face Saphira with bared weapons. Hate crossed their faces as they glared at her. There were 12 of them, all ugly, jeering brutes. Aragorn wondered why they did not flee. He had thought that the sight of Saphira would frighten them away.
Why are they waiting? Are they going to attack us or not?
He was shocked when the largest Urgal advanced and spat,
Our master wishes to speak with you, human!
The monster spoke in deep, rolling gutturals.
It's a trap,
warned Saphira before Aragorn could say anything.
Don't listen to him!
At least let's find out what he has to say,
he reasoned, curious but extremely wary. Who is your master? He asked. The Urgal sneered.
His name does not deserve to be given to one as low as yourself. He rules the sky and holds dominance over the earth. You are no more than a stray ant to him. Yet he has decreed that you shall be brought before him alive. Take heart that you have become worthy of such notice.
I'll never go with you nor any of my enemies, declared Aragorn, thinking of Yazwak. Whether you serve Shade, Urgal, or some twisted fiend I've not heard of, I have no wish to parley with him.
That is a grave mistake,
growled the Urgal, showing his fangs.
There is no way to escape him. Eventually, you will stand before our master. If you resist, he will fill your days with agony.
Aragorn wondered who had the power to bring the Urgals under one banner. Was there a third great force loose in the land, along with the Empire and the Varden? Keep your offer, and tell your master that the crows can eat his entrails for all I care. Rage swept through the Urgals. Their leader howled, gnashing his teeth.
We'll drag you to him, then.
He waved his arm, and the Urgals rushed at Saphira. Raising his right hand, Aragorn barked, Geirda!
No! Cried Saphira.
But it was too late. The monsters faltered as Aragorn's palm glowed. Beams of light lanced from his hand, striking each of them in the gut. The Urgals were thrown through the air and smashed into trees, falling senseless to the ground. Fatigue suddenly drained Aragorn of strength, and he tumbled off Saphira. His mind felt hazy and dull. As Saphira bent over him, he realized that he might have gone too far. The energy needed to lift and throw 12 Urgals was enormous. Fear engulfed him as he struggled to stay conscious. At the edge of his vision, he saw one of the Urgals stagger to his feet, sword in hand. Aragorn tried to warn Saphira, but she was too weak.
No,
he thought feebly. The Urgal crept towards Saphira until he was well past her tail, then raised his sword to strike her neck.
No!
Saphira whirled on the monster, roaring savagely. Her talons slashed with blinding speed. Blood spurted everywhere as the Urgal was rent in two. Saphira snapped her jaws together with finality and returned to Aragorn. She gently wrapped her bloody claws around his torso, then growled and jumped into the air. The night blurred into a pain-filled streak. The hypnotic sound of Saphira's wings put him in a bleary trance. Up, down, up, down, up, down. When Saphira eventually landed, Aragorn was dimly aware of Brom talking with her. Aragorn could not understand what they said, but a decision must have been reached because Saphira took off again. His stupor yielded to sleep that covered him like a soft blanket. Vision of Perfection. Aragorn twisted under the blankets, reluctant to open his eyes. He dozed, then a fuzzy thought entered his mind. How did I get here? Confused, he pulled the blankets tighter and felt something hard on his right arm. He tried to move his wrist. It zinged with pain.
The Urgals!
He bolted upright. He lay in a small clearing that was empty, save a small campfire heating a stew-filled pot. A squirrel chattered on a branch. His bow and quiver rested alongside the blankets. Attempting to stand made him grimace, as his muscles were feeble and sore. There was a heavy splint on his bruised right arm.
"Where is everyone?"
he wondered forlornly. He tried to call Saphira, but to his alarm could not feel her. Ravenous hunger gripped him, so he ate the stew. Still hungry, he looked for the saddlebags, hoping to find a chunk of bread. Neither the saddlebags nor the horses were in the clearing.
"I'm sure there's a good reason for this,"
he thought, suppressing a surge of uneasiness. He wandered about the clearing, then returned to his blankets and rolled them up. Without anything better to do, he sat against a tree and watched the clouds overhead. Hours passed, but Brom and Saphira did not show up.
"I hope nothing's wrong."
As the afternoon dragged on, Aragorn grew bored and started to explore the surrounding forest. When he became tired, he rested under a fir tree that leaned against a boulder, with a bowl-shaped depression filled with clear dew water. Aragorn stared at the water and thought about Brom's instructions for scrying.
"Maybe I can see where Saphira is. Brom said that scrying takes a lot of energy, but I'm stronger than he is."
He breathed deeply and closed his eyes. In his mind, he formed a picture of Saphira, making it as lifelike as possible. It was more demanding than he expected. Then he said, "Draumur Kupa," and gazed at the water. Its surface became completely flat, frozen by an invisible force. The reflections disappeared and the water became clear. On it shimmered an image of Saphira. Her surroundings were pure white, but Aragorn could see that she was flying. Brom sat on her back, beard streaming, sword on his knees. Aragorn tiredly let the image fade.
"At least they're safe."
He gave himself a few minutes to recuperate, then leaned back over the water.
"Roran, how are you?"
In his mind, he saw his cousin clearly. Impulsively, he drew upon the magic and uttered the words. The water grew still, then the image formed on its surface. Roran appeared, sitting on an invisible chair. Like Saphira, his surroundings were white. There were new lines on Roran's face. He looked more like Garrow than ever before. Aragorn held the image in place as long as he could.
"Is Roran in Therensford? He certainly know where I've been."
The strain of using magic had brought beads of sweat to his forehead. He sighed, and for a long time was content just to sit. Then an absurd notion struck him.
"What if I tried to scry something I created with my imagination or saw in a dream?"
He smiled.
"Perhaps I'd be shown what my own consciousness looks like."
It was too tempting an idea to pass by. He knelt by the water once again.
"What shall I look for?"
He considered a few things, but discarded them all when he remembered his dream about the woman in the cell. After fixing the scene in his mind, he spoke the words and watched the water intently. He waited, but nothing happened.
Disappointed, he was about to release the magic when inky blackness swirled across the water, covering the surface. The image of a lone candle flickered in the darkness, brightening to illuminate a stone cell. The woman from his dream was curled up on a cot in one corner. She lifted her head, dark hair falling back, and stared directly at Aragorn. He froze, the force of her gaze keeping him in place. Chills ran up his spine as their eyes locked. Then the woman trembled and collapsed limply. The water cleared. Aragorn rocked back on his heels, gasping. "This can't be. She shouldn't be real. I only dreamed about her. How could she know I was looking at her? And how could I have scryed into a dungeon that I've never seen?" He shook his head, wondering if any of his other dreams had been visions. The rhythmic thump of Saphira's wings interrupted his thoughts. He hurried back to the clearing, arriving just as Saphira landed. Brom was on her back, as Aragorn had seen, but his sword was now bloody. Brom's face was contorted, the edges of his beard were stained red. "What happened?" asked Aragorn, afraid that he had been wounded.
"What happened?" roared the old man. "I've been trying to clean up your mess."
He slashed the air with the sword, flinging drops of blood along its arc.
"Do you know what you did with that little trick of yours? Do you?"
"I stopped the Urgles from catching you," said Aragorn, a pit forming in his stomach.
"Yes," growled Brom, "but that piece of magic nearly killed you. You've been sleeping for 2 days. There were 12 Urgles. 12! But that didn't stop you from trying to throw them all the way to Tirm now, did it? What were you thinking? Sending a rock through each of their heads would have been the smart thing to do. But no, you had to knock them unconscious so they could run away later. I've spent the last 2 days trying to track them down. Even with Saphira, 3 escaped."
"I didn't want to kill them," said Aragorn, feeling very small.
"It wasn't a problem in Yazwak."
"There was no choice then, and I couldn't control the magic. This time it just seemed extreme."
"Extreme," cried Brom. "It's not extreme when they wouldn't show you the same mercy. And why, oh why, did you show yourself to them?"
"You said that they had found Saphira's footprints. It didn't make any difference if they saw me," said Aragorn defensively.
Brom stabbed his sword into the dirt and snapped, "I said they had probably found her tracks. We didn't know for certain. They might have believed they were chasing some stray travellers. But why would they think that now? After all, you landed right in front of them. And since you let them live, they're scrambling around the countryside with all sorts of fantastic tales. This might even get back to the Empire." He threw his hands up. "You don't even deserve to be called a rider after this, boy!"
Brom yanked his sword out of the ground and stomped to the fire. He took a rag from inside his robe and angrily began to clean the blade. Aragorn was stunned. He tried to ask Saphira for advice, but all she would say was,
"Speak with Brom."
Hesitantly, Aragorn made his way to the fire and asked, "Would it help if I said I was sorry?" Brom sighed and sheathed his sword.
"No, it wouldn't. Your feelings can't change what happened."
He jabbed his finger at Aragorn's chest.
"You made some very bad choices that could have dangerous repercussions, not least of which is that you almost died. Died, Aragorn. From now on, you're going to have to think. There's a reason why we're born with brains in our heads, not rocks."
Aragorn nodded, abashed. "It's not as bad as you think, though. The Urgles already knew about me. They had orders to capture me." Astonishment widened Brom's eyes. He stuck his unlit pipe in his mouth.
"No, it's not as bad as I thought. It's worse. Saphira told me you had talked with the Urgles, but she didn't mention this."
The words tumbled out of Aragorn's mouth as he quickly described the confrontation.
"So they have some sort of leader now, eh?" questioned Brom.
Aragorn nodded.
"And you just defied his wishes, insulted him, and attacked his men?"
Brom shook his head.
"I didn't think it could get any worse. If the Urgles had been killed, your rudeness would have gone unnoticed, but now it'll be impossible to ignore. Congratulations. You just made enemies with one of the most powerful beings in Alagazia."
"All right, I made a mistake," said Aragorn sullenly.
"Yes, you did," agreed Brom, eyes flashing. What has me worried, though, is who this Urgal leader is.
Shivering, Aragorn asks softly, What happens now?
There was an uncomfortable pause. Your arm is going to take at least a couple of weeks to heal. That time would be well spent forging some sense into you. I suppose this is partially my fault. I've been teaching you how to do things, but not whether you should. It takes discretion, something you obviously lack. All the magic in Alagazia won't help you if you don't know when to use it.
But we're still going to Dras Leona, right? Asked Aragorn.
Brom rolled his eyes. Yes, we can keep looking for the Ra'zac, but even if we find them, it won't do any good until you've healed.
He began unsaddling Saphira.
Are you well enough to ride?
I think so.
Good. Then we can still cover a few miles today.
Where are Cadoc and Snowfire?
Brom pointed off to the side. Over there a ways. I picketed them where there was grass.
Aragorn prepared to leave, then followed Brom to the horses.
Saphira said pointedly,
If you had explained what you were planning to do, none of this would have happened. I would have told you it was a bad idea not to kill the Urgals. I only agreed to do what you asked because I assumed it was halfway reasonable.
I don't want to talk about it.
As you wish, she sniffed.
As they rode, every bump and dip in the trail made Aragorn grit his teeth with discomfort. If he had been alone, he would have stopped. With Brom there, he dared not complain. Also, Brom started drilling him with difficult scenarios involving Urgals, magic, and Saphira. The imagined fights were many and varied. Sometimes a shade or other dragons were included. Aragorn discovered that it was possible to torture his body and mind at the same time. He got most of the questions wrong and became increasingly frustrated. When they stopped for the night, Brom grumbled shortly,
It was a start.
Aragorn knew that he was disappointed.
Master of the Blade.
The next day was easier on both of them. Aragorn felt better and was able to answer more of Brom's questions correctly. After an especially difficult exercise, Aragorn mentioned his scrying of the woman. Brom pulled on his beard.
You say she was imprisoned?
Yes.
Did you see her face? Asked Brom intently.
Not very clearly. The lighting was bad, yet I could tell that she was beautiful. It's strange. I didn't have any problem seeing her eyes. And she did look at me.
Brom shook his head. As far as I know, it's impossible for anyone to know if they're being scryed upon.
Do you know who she might be? Asked Aragorn, surprised by the eagerness in his own voice.
Not really, admitted Brom. If pressed, I suppose I could come up with a few guesses, but none of them would be very likely.
This dream of yours is peculiar. Somehow you managed to scry in your sleep something that you'd never seen before, without saying the words of power. Dreams do occasionally touch the spirit realm, but this is different. Perhaps to understand this we should search every prison and dungeon until we find the woman, bantered Aragorn. He actually thought it would be a good idea. Brom laughed and rode on. Brom's strict training filled nearly every hour as the days slowly blended into weeks. Because of his splint, Aragorn was forced to use his left hand whenever they sparred. Before long, he could duel as well with his left hand as he had with his right. By the time they crossed the spine and came to the plains, spring had crept over Alagazia, summoning a multitude of flowers. The bare, deciduous trees were russet with buds, while new blades of grass began to push up between last year's dead stalks. Birds returned from their winter absence to mate and build nests. The travellers followed the Tork River southeast along the edge of the spine. It grew steadily as tributaries flowed into it from every side, feeding its bulging girth. When the river was over a league wide, Brom pointed at the silt islands that dotted the water.
We're close to Leona Lake now, he said. It's only about 2 leagues away.
Do you think we can get there before nightfall? Asked Aragorn.
We can try.
Dusk soon made the trail hard to follow, but the sound of the river at their side guided them. When the moon rose, the bright disk provided enough light to see what lay ahead. Leona Lake looked like a thin sheet of silver beaten over the land. The water was so calm and smooth it did not even seem to be liquid. Aside from a bright strip of moonlight reflecting off the surface, it was indistinguishable from the ground. Sephira was on the rocky shore, fanning her wings to dry them. Aragorn greeted her, and she said,
"The water is lovely, deep, cool, and clear."
"Maybe I'll go swimming tomorrow," he responded. They set up camp under a stand of trees, and were soon asleep. At dawn, Aragorn eagerly rushed out to see the lake in daylight. A white-capped expanse of water rippled with fan-shaped patterns where the wind brushed it. The pure size of it delighted him. He whooped and ran to the water. "Sephira, where are you? Let's have some fun!" The moment Aragorn climbed onto her, she jumped out over the water. They soared upward, circling over the lake, but even at that height the opposing shore was not visible. "Would you like to take a bath?" Aragorn casually asked Sephira. She grinned wolfishly.
"Hold on."
She locked her wings and sank to the waves, clipping the crests with her claws. The water sparkled in the sunlight as they sailed over it. Aragorn whooped again. Then Sephira folded her wings and dived into the lake, her head and neck entering it like a lance. The water hit Aragorn like an icy wall, knocking out his breath and almost tearing him off Sephira. He held on tightly as she swam to the surface. With three strokes of her feet, she breached it and sent a burst of shimmering water toward the sky. Aragorn gasped and shook his hair as Sephira slithered across the lake, using her tail as a rudder.
"Ready?"
Aragorn nodded and took a deep breath, tightening his arms. This time they slid gently under the water. They could see for yards through the unclouded liquid. Sephira twisted and turned in fantastic shapes, slipping through the water like an eel. Aragorn felt as if he were riding a sea serpent of legend. Just as his lungs started to cry for air, Sephira arched her back and pointed her head upward. An explosion of droplets haloed them as she leapt into the air, wings snapping open. With two powerful flaps, she gained altitude.
"Wow, that was fantastic!" exclaimed Aragorn.
"Yes,"
said Sephira happily,
"though it's a pity you can't hold your breath longer."
"Nothing I can do about that," he said, pressing water out of his hair. His clothes were drenched, and the wind from Sephira's wings chilled him. He pulled at his splint. His wrist itched. Once Aragorn was dry, he and Brom saddled the horses and started around Leona Lake in high spirits, while Sephira playfully dived in and out of the water. Before dinner, Aragorn blocked Zarok's edge in preparation for their usual sparring. Neither he nor Brom moved as they waited for the other to strike first. Aragorn inspected their surroundings for anything that might give him an advantage. A stick near the fire caught his attention. Aragorn swooped down, grabbed the stick and hurled it at Brom. The splint got in his way, though, and Brom easily sidestepped the piece of wood. The old man rushed forward, swinging his sword. Aragorn ducked just as the blade whistled over his head. He growled and tackled Brom ferociously. They pitched to the ground, each struggling to stay on top. Aragorn rolled to the side and swept Zarok over the ground at Brom's shins. Brom parried the blow with the hilt of his sword, then jumped to his feet. Twisting as he stood, Aragorn attacked again, guiding Zarok through a complex pattern. Sparks danced from their blaze as they struck again and again. Brom blocked each blow, his face tight with concentration, but Aragorn could tell that he was tiring. The relentless hammering continued as each sought an opening in the other's defenses. Then Aragorn felt the battle change. Blow by blow, he gained advantage. Brom's parries slowed, and he lost ground. Aragorn easily blocked a stab from Brom. Veins pulsed on the old man's forehead, and cords bulged in his neck from the effort. Suddenly confident, Aragorn swung Zarok faster than ever, weaving a web of steel around Brom's sword. With a burst of speed, he smashed the flat of his blade against Brom's guard and knocked the sword to the ground. Before Brom could react, Aragorn flicked Zarok up to his throat. They stood panting, the red sword tip resting on Brom's collarbone. Aragorn slowly lowered his arm and backed away. It was the first time he had bested Brom without resorting to trickery. Brom picked up his sword and sheathed it. Still breathing hard, he said, "We're done for today."
"But we just started," said Aragorn, startled.
Brom shook his head.
"I can teach you nothing more of the sword. Of all the fighters I've met, only three of them could have defeated me like that, and I doubt any of them could have done it with their left hand."
He smiled ruefully.
I may not be as young as I used to be, but I can tell that you're a talented and rare swordsman. Does this mean we're not going to spar every night? Asked Aragorn. Oh, you're not getting out of it, laughed Brom. But we'll go easier now. It's not as important if we miss a night here or there. He wiped his brow. Just remember, if you ever have the misfortune to fight an elf, trained or not, female or male, expect to lose. They, along with dragons and other creatures of magic, are many times stronger than nature intended. Even the weakest elf could easily overpower you. The same goes for the Razak. They are not human, and tire much more slowly than we do.
Is there any way to become their equal? Asked Aragorn. He sat cross-legged by Saphira.
You fought well, she said.
He smiled.
Brom seated himself with a shrug. There are a few, but none are available to you now. Magic will let you defeat all but the strongest enemies. For those, you'll need Saphira's help, plus a great deal of luck. Remember, when creatures of magic actually use magic, they can accomplish things that could kill a human, because of their enhanced abilities.
How do you fight with magic? Asked Aragorn.
What do you mean?
Well, he said, leaning on an elbow, suppose I was attacked by a shade. How could I block his magic? Most spells take place instantaneously, which makes it impossible to react in time. And even if I could, how would I nullify an enemy's magic? It seems I would have to know my opponent's intention before he acted. He paused. I just don't see how it can be done. Whoever attacked first would win.
Brom sighed. What you are talking about, a wizard's duel, if you will, is extremely dangerous. Haven't you ever wondered how Galbatorix was able to defeat all of the riders with the help of only a dozen or so traitors?
I never thought about it, acknowledged Aragorn.
There are several ways. Some you'll learn about later, but the main one is that Galbatorix was, and still is, a master of breaking into people's minds. You see, in a wizard's duel there are strict rules that each side must observe, or else both contestants will die. To begin with, no one uses magic until one of the participants gains access to the other's mind.
Saphira curled her tail comfortably around Aragorn and asked,
Why wait? By the time an enemy realizes that you've attacked, it will be too late for him to act.
Aragorn repeated the question out loud. Brom shook his head.
No, it won't. If I were to suddenly use my power against you, Aragorn, you would surely die, but in the brief moment before you were destroyed, there would be time for a counterattack. Therefore, unless one combatant has a death wish, neither side attacks until one of them has breached the other's defenses.
Then what happens? Aragorn inquired.
Brom shrugged and said, Once you're inside your enemy's mind, it's easy enough to anticipate what he will do and prevent it. Even with that advantage, it's still possible to lose if you don't know how to counteract spells.
He filled and lit his pipe.
And that requires extraordinarily quick thinking. Before you can defend yourself, you have to understand the exact nature of the forces directed at you. If you're being attacked with heat, you have to know whether it is being conveyed to you through air, fire, light, or some other medium. Only once that's known can you combat the magic by, for instance, chilling the heated material.
It sounds difficult.
Extremely, confirmed Brom.
A plume of smoke rose from his pipe.
Seldom can people survive such a duel for more than a few seconds. The enormous amount of effort and skill required condemns anyone without the proper training to a quick death. Once you've progressed, I'll start teaching you the necessary methods. In the meantime, if you ever find yourself facing a wizard's duel, I suggest you run away as fast as you can.
The Mire of Drasleona. They lunched at Fasaloft, a bustling lakeside village. It was a charming place, set on a rise overlooking the lake. As they ate in the hostel's common room, Aragorn listened intently to the gossip and was relieved to hear no rumours of him and Saphira. The trail, now a road, had grown steadily worse over the past 2 days. Wagon wheels and iron-shod hooves had conspired to tear up the ground, making many sections impassable.
An increase in travellers forced Saphira to hide during the day, and then catch up with Brom and Aragorn at night. For days they continued south along Leona Lake's vast shore. Aragorn began to wonder if they would ever get around it, so he was heartened when they met men who said that Dras Leona was an easy